NPR Music is celebrating 10 years, and we're looking back at some moments and memories. It's 2010. I'm Bob Boylan here with Marissa LaRusso and Daoud Tyler Amin, and this is Kanye West.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen. Do it, screams from the haters, got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need his theme music. No one man should have all that power. The clock's ticking, I just count.
That was my favorite sample of the year.
The King
Absolutely.
Crimson.
The King Crimson sample. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Power is a song.
This was the first time that I remember on Saturday Night Live a musical guest was allowed to completely redo the set. Do you remember this performance?
No.
He did this song. And he was standing at the top of a white staircase wearing a crown and what looked like maybe a redux of like Michael Jackson's Thriller outfit. And the entire set was covered in a white sheet. And then he pulled it off when the bass kicked in and there was just a zillion dancers all in white.
Wow.
Like it was this was a guy who like for the past, 6 years had been telling us that his intention was to remake pop in his image. And this was maybe the moment where it was like, oh, I think he did it.
When you hear this record now, when you think about how you loved the record and what you thought and absorbed in the final days of 2010 and how you took that record and now look back on it all these years later with the personality of Kanye West being as what it is and and all the music he's put out since, where does this fit for you?
I mean, sometimes I wish I could listen to it now the way that I did then. Because, it's funny to think about it. Taylor Swift released a record at like, I think a couple of weeks before this one with a song about him on it. And if you can believe it, there was a time when that move worked out for her in terms of public image. But it's very difficult to separate the persona and, everything that's changed in terms of what he represents from the music, obviously. But I think I remember being, first of all, astounded by his rate of output. I mean, his first two albums came out in consecutive years, and then he took a year off, and then his third and fourth albums came out in consecutive years. And then, if you count Watch the Throne and his Good Music project, we had Kanye West projects in 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013. So it's like, that's somebody who never stops working. Mm-hmm. And, that might be part of the reason why in the last couple of years he seemed like a little bit less in control of his powers. But like this was the moment where just everything was coming together. And it was a moment when like it seemed like everything depended on it, because the incident with Taylor Swift at the VMAs in 2009 had really like his public image had taken a beating. And it seemed like if he didn't really deliver with this one, then like we might be done with him.
I'm going to play something really different now. Are you ready, Marissa?
I'm ready.
Lying on our backs on the pavement, let there be light. You opened our eyes. The apple tree is an open casket. Lying on our backs on the pavement, let there be light. Let it.
Bob, I don't know why you would say that. That sounds different from Kanye.
Well, they both have really long titles.
That's true.
That's about all that connects the two.
This is a band called The World is a Beautiful Place and I Am No Longer Afraid to Die. Just a quick, snappy name. And the song is called Victim Kin Seek Suit. It's from an EP that came out in 2010 called Formlessness. And for me, this EP is kind of came out in a moment where there was a critical mass of what we will now call the emo revival, which is a bunch of bands, that started maybe in like 2010-ish and have continued until now to put out music that sounds really inspired by bands from the 90s, emo bands like Mineral and Cap'n Jazz. and American football.
Describe to people who are not in the emo scene, I mean, there are many waves of that music.
Yeah, that's true. Even the bands that these bands are imitating were kind of a second wave after like hardcore bands in the 80s, like Rites of Spring. And then
it started not far from here.
Not far from here, totally. And then it moved to the Midwest with all of those bands that I just mentioned. And then in the kind of early mid-aughts when I was a teen, it was everything. Emo was a name applied to everything from My Chemical Romance to Dashboard Confessional to Paramore to everything that was played in Hot Topics in malls across America.
That was the moment I remember there was a spread in some teen magazine and it said, "Am I emo?" and it was like a boy and a girl standing side by side and they had like the sideswept bangs and the wallet chain and the tiny shirts with the logo.
Oh my God. If you have to ask, I think the answer is yes.
Probably are.
You are
That's
emo.
True.
Let me play this for a minute.
My instincts are the enemy. I warned you. I've damaged good inside of me.
So American Football is one of those bands that this wave of revival bands was imitating, and then American Football ended up getting back together and putting out a new record in 2016, perhaps as a result of all of the attention from the emo revival reviving itself.
What'd you think of it?
To be honest, I didn't love it as much as the first American Football record, but it's still beautiful. I could listen to twinkly guitars all day.
Doubt you?
Yeah, I'm a fan. It's one of those things where it's sort of difficult to evaluate it on its own terms at this point. Because
totally.
There's so many, depending on when you start looking and when you start listening, I'm sure there are people young enough to think that the American Football record that came out last year is a ripoff of their favorite, you know, boxing record or whatever it is.
Awesome. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back. We're talking about 2010. You're listening to All Songs Considered.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lyft, reminding listeners that they could be relaxing in a Lyft ride right now with their eyes closed, listening to Beethoven or whale sounds or a babbling brook or something else relaxing. Lyft provides rides as relaxing as the buttery smooth voice of a public radio announcer, because riding is just a more relaxing way to drive. Lyft, it matters how you get there. Download and ride today.
So we're talking about 2010, looking back, and we'll have a whole series of podcasts, in fact, one for every year of NPR Music's 10 years, starting in 2007. Online, there's a whole lot of stuff we're all writing and thinking about, and we're not trying to be completist here. We're just trying to like highlight moments that seemed important to us, either in retrospect or at the time. One of the things that happened in 2010 was that the Beatles' music wound up on iTunes. Now, this may seem like in this day and age where you can have and listen to everything, there are very few holdouts. This was huge, and especially.
Well, it's Bob, I'd like to know from you what felt especially huge about it, because 2010 was also the year that I kind of officially started working in music media, and I feel like there's a story like this, sometimes involving the Beatles, basically every year. So what was the big deal for you when this happened?
Well, two things. If you go back to 1967, the Beatles started this company. It was called Apple Corp, C-O-R-P-S, a pun on Apple Corp. And they did this thing. And then along comes Steve Jobs, and he starts a computer company, right? And he calls it Apple. He claims that he just wanted to be in front of Atari in the alphabet because that was the only other kind of computer thing. But you know, and we know, Steve is a music lover and a lover of the Beatles, and I'm not going to go down that road because somebody might tap on my door. But that said, there was a lawsuit. Apple Corp, the Beatles, sued Steve and Apple.
Oh, okay.
Inc.
This is
and
part
so
of the story I don't
this
know.
This was battle for years and years and years and years and years, those lawsuits. And basically what Apple Computers said, fine, we won't do anything in the music business. We won't deal with music. And then 2000, along comes the iPod, mm-hmm. and now Apple is in the music business and gets bigger and bigger in the music business. Now it's 2010, 10 years after the iPod, and the biggest absent group and one of the biggest selling bands in popular music is not on the digital platform that was the primary platform for people to listen to music, period.
Yeah.
Right? And they settled. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of huge. And it was huge both in a cultural way, because here, I know for me in my life, both those people, the Beatles and Apple, mean an awful lot in yeah. terms of music and technology and revolution in many ways. And the fact that these people who are very anti, and this is a little naive look, but who are very anti the regular corporate world, were in a lawsuit battle was always an irony to me. And
yeah.
it was just, maybe if I play this song, it would
be. Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying.
And so it was kind of a beautiful thing. And it was great to have the Beatles. You know, I could rip my CDs, but they never really sounded good. These MP3s that were put out sounded very good. And later would sound even better when they remastered many of these songs. And it was just kind of a great thing to have some of my very favorite music in the platform in 2010 that I was listening to, which was an iPod, soon to be my iPhone. And I don't know about anybody else, but I think about this and I think about like how I listen to music. And I listen, 80% of my music now is listened to on a device that's in my pocket.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. been true for a while. I don't know about you all.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny to think that our lifetimes include a period where there were CD releases by the Beatles that did not sound good because they were not made for that format. But exactly. when CDs came around, people said you have to have the Beatles on CD. It was just like, well, we'll just do this then. Mm. If I'm remembering it right, at the end of 2010, I think what I did was went through my iPod Classic and made an on-the-go playlist of all of the stuff that was already on it that I saw on NPR Music and Pitchfork's like best of the year huh. lists, and just walked around listening to that playlist that I had made for myself.
Before
it was when I first moved to
here,
DC.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. But which is crazy. It's like that, it's very much like a, you know, a sign of being just sort of caught between, you know, eras of technology. Still have my iPod Classic. It's held together with a rubber band, but I don't do that anymore.
I feel like I'm also kind of caught in between formats of listening to music because, and this may be shocking, I don't use Spotify and I kind of use Apple Music, but mostly I try to have the MP3s of the things that I want to hear. And if I can't, then I'll probably go to Bandcamp because it seems like a platform that is a little bit friendlier to artists. Mm-hmm. I can't say that for certain, but...
Oh, we did a bit of this on another show when Lars talks about the Bandcamp's formation, mm-hmm. which didn't become bigger till later, but... As in many things, things start. This was the year, 2010 is the year Instagram starts, but you know, not many people are using it.
Mm-hmm. The idea of just not having a physical copy or a digital copy of the music that I love and just trusting that the cloud will always be there really freaks me out.
Yeah, it was one of those things that we sort of start to say goodbye to as soon as smartphones come on the scene, is that like ever so slowly, the idea that digital music anyway belongs to anybody at all starts to erode more and more.
I just wrote a little essay that will also be online. It's about the end of record collecting. And mm-hmm. it's not bemoaning the fact that we don't have big physical things, because I love vinyl and I love albums and I love artwork and I love to hold them and I love to look at them when I listen to music. But I'm not bemoaning that, because the beauty of digital is that I can have a conversation with you and tell me about something and I can download it and listen to it tonight or mm-hmm. now or whenever. And I love that. But I think about you're in your middle 20s, Marissa, and what would you pass along to your best friends or should you have children or whatever? I mean, you're going to pass a playlist along?
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, that's not going to be there. You know it's not going to be there.
That's
right?
True.
It's going to vanish. And so the physical I miss. Other things in 2010?
Well, it was a big pop year. I think Kesha's first record came out that year. We got Robin back. Robin sort of started her second act with the Body Talk trilogy, as it was supposed to be, and then it turned into more of a kind of meta EP thing. Katy Perry, California Girls, I think dropped at the beginning of the summer of 2010, but it felt like we had like 3 years of the album that eventually arose from it. Teenage Dream had an album cycle that was just like, it was kind of like what Shania Twain was doing at the end of the 90s, where it was just like, it seemed like every single song was a single. There was like a deluxe reissue. And it was just like, she knew how to play this long game where there were, you know, it was just like, you never stopped hearing about Katy Perry. There was something new every couple of months.
Does that bother you? Because that drives me crazy.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I certainly like admired, you know, her savvy about it. You know, it was, I mean, the rise of Bieber that year. I think the video for Baby went online and actually like broke a YouTube record that same year.
And it was a big year for Gaga too. I feel like she won pretty much every VMA and she wore the meat dress. She was ubiquitous in 2010.
That was the Bad Romance year. That's right.
Yeah.
That Sleigh Bells record came out that year that I madly loved. I don't know if you remember Treats.
Yeah.
Sufjan Stevens, The Age of Odds. Do you have others, Marissa?
The Suburbs by Arcade Fire came out that year, and I listened to that every day after it came out for months.
And it was when it was still weird. It was like they were one of maybe two or three bands that had ever performed on The Daily Show. That was big.
This was a record that I've listened to over and over again that I think that just stuck with me, and it's just a cut off of LCD Sound System. This is happening, and I'd like to go out on All I Want, because this is sometimes all I want. It's this very song. Thanks all for doing this.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks,
2010.